Are you ready for this? It's your All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Get in the ring and put your dukes up and let's get ready to Pod Blast as we talk KP's career KO, Sangakkara knocking seven bells out of Bangladesh, Jesse Ryder finally boxes clever, or does he? And we talk such other heavyweights as Strauss, Downton, Andy Flower and Devon Malcolm. It's your All Out Cricket Pod Blast. Oh, ladies and gents, it's your All Out Cricket Pod Blast. With me as always is Alex.
Hello there, everyone. What an auspicious week.
How auspicious it's been. I'm glad you described it as that because it's so auspicious. How auspicious has it been, Al?
It's been about as auspicious a fortnight as you would ever expect in the middle of the off-season. So much has happened since the last show and we're here to flog the dead horse that is KP's axing and Flower's sacking.
So what can be said about this that hasn't... Oh, sacking, already controversy. What can be said about this, Al, that hasn't been said?
Well, let us begin, because politeness dictates, Ross.
Of course.
By introducing the other people present in the room, yeah. Right by your side. Mm. Hi, Phil.
Hey. Oh, hey, Phil.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Alex.
A worried expression on your face, Joe.
That's just because I didn't think Ross was going to introduce us, and it might get really embarrassing.
Hi guys.
But no, I'm at ease now.
It's like turning up for a drinks event where it's your friend's 30th, and she's just filled it with her university friends, and you don't know any of them, and they won't let you into their social circle.
Yeah, and in the end, you go, but it's too late. It's too late by the time they're introduced, and then what do you do?
And then, of course,
he retrieved it just in the nick of
time. Just in time, I felt.
And then, of course, it's their 31st, and you turn up again, and it's exactly the same people. And it's Groundhog Day.
I thought you were leading off with a skit. That's what I thought.
Do you know what? Here is, at times of crisis,
yeah.
I like to turn to the reassuring noise of late 70s disco. You're probably the same, Ross.
Sure.
And a lot of England fans this week have been getting in touch via Twitter and been trying to express themselves in the loss of KP in the following way. That was actually Ian Bell's rendition.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And at the end, he
he's going to be lonely in the middle of
order. KP!
My heart is breaking.
Oh, for you. Does that sum it up, Phil Walker?
Oh, yeah, in a nutshell, yeah.
Phil, what about that awkward moment?
I prefer the Jimmy Somerville version.
Yeah, that's true.
What about that awkward moment at dinner parties where they go, what do you do? And you say, well, I'm a cricket editor. And they say, oh, you know.
Yeah, the verbal shrapnel of dinner parties, yeah.
You
don't
lie, though, don't you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, at best, I'm a sports writer. but, yeah, often I'm an astronaut or you know,
that's
part of a bubble or an air hostess or whatever.
East London Poet, I think. Wasn't that what you...
No, I've never thrown that one out there.
Sure,
I'm kind of putting words in my mouth. I'm pretty sure. And East London, I've never said that.
That's how we'll introduce you at the top of the show from now on. Okay.
Right, Kevin Peterson.
But Kevin Peterson, have we got a view? What do we say? If we've run out of words
it's
for this.
It's the view that we don't have a view.
Yeah, is it that view? What's your view,
Phil
Walker?
It's hard to have a view, isn't it, when people won't tell you what's happened.
That's the key.
That's the main point here.
Yes.
There we go, Phil.
Who's not telling us what happened the most?
Yes.
Without knowing what's happened, it's hard to...
It's hard to ascertain who's telling us the least.
Who's telling... Who's, everyone's shutting up.
I would say Cookie has taken the fifth very much on this one.
Oh, he has.
He's just kind of somewhere in the ether, isn't he? And he's not saying a word, and yet, the more we hear, the more his influence seems to have been pretty strong.
Coincidentally, in fact, he hasn't been saying very much, but he has been expressing himself through the medium of song.
Just one second, you'd be back to bother me. Oh, now go. Walk out the door. Just
So that's in fact what Alistair Cook has got to say about it. What have you got to say about it, Joe Harmon? KP?
Well, I wasn't just being flippant. It is genuinely hard to know what to think when all the information is not yet available. I guess my main thought is that it's been a horrible case of mismanagement. Peterson is evidently very difficult to deal with, has been ever he's gone. Michael Vaughan, for instance, managed to get the best out of him in 2005, thinks it's absolute madness that they've got rid of him now. So there's a case of not only not having strong enough personalities, but personalities willing enough to perhaps be a bit more malleable, be a bit more open to different personalities in a changing room. I think there has been a feeling that Flower wants them all as one, which in one sense is right. As a team, you want to play together. That doesn't mean you all have to be the same people. My feeling is we don't quite know what's happened, but something's gone badly wrong, and I think the ECB and England management has to take a fair share of blame, and more so than Peterson in this case, as far as from the facts that I'm aware of so far. That's what I thought.
Yeah, now. Strauss, though, Sunday Times, says it's not any one individual thing, because I think all of us would agree, if you take the so-called individual things he's done, they're not particularly impressive.
No.
Things like he's played for himself, or he mentioned that he wanted to score a certain amount of runs.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, well, it's nonsense. But
he picks his toenails, I hear. He doesn't like sewing. He gets very angry about that.
He can be quite tardy.
He can be slightly tardy.
There was also a slight suggestion of grooming at one point. Apparently he takes the younger members of the team around. They're very impressionable, and he keeps them somewhere near his knee. I thought it was very creepy. But Strauss said in the Sunday Times, it's nothing to do with that. It's the wrong way of looking at it. This is about team and everything just building up together into a big picture where you, quote, can't trust him. And he was quoting some corporate book about teamwork. What do you think of that sort of approach, Phil?
It echoes what Collingwood said in the last magazine where we did this round table before everything had hit the fan. And he said... This was before Flower had gone as well, incidentally. And he said, well, it's a balancing act. And while everyone knows what Peterson brings, we also have to acknowledge that it's an inexact science putting a team together. And it has to always be pulling in the right direction. And it has to be more than the sum of its parts. Collingwood's kind of the perfect man to say that because he kind of was the yin to Peterson's yang, and yet they batted really well together, and I believe they were reasonably close as blokes. But it was a very kind of fair, hard-boiled summary, and it quite prescient because, you know, 2 weeks later, this story comes out again. I tend to think that you're right, that there is no one particular shocker that Peterson has carried out.
Well, did you see
and I thought
Australia?
There was. I thought something initially when Selby in The Guardian wrote the story 2 weeks ago or whatever it is now, and then it started to build up and up. I thought, my God, something terrible.
There must
happened.
Be a thing.
You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to kind of put words in, but something shocking must have happened. And I'm not sure that is the case.
Yeah,
it's an accumulation of we can trust over a period of quite a long time. And you know, in November 2012, Cook, new skipper, unburdened by the pressures of the job, only saw Peterson's runs and the good things that he undoubtedly brings to a team. But Cook, who is a classic pragmatist, pretty laid back, pretty level-headed kind of bloke, and clearly wants England to do well, if he has been influential in this decision, then that to me is quite persuasive, really. And while it's totally regrettable that you're never going to see the man play again because he's unique, and overall my emotion is just disappointment and sadness and regret, but if Cook has reached this conclusion, then it's quite persuasive that as they move through the next 2 years, you've got to remember Peterson's 33 with a dodgy knee as well, and arguably not quite the player he was 18 months ago. Then I can understand that they've reached this decision, controversial though it is, and obviously botched though it was delivered.
Do you not think this word trust is a bit of an issue as well? Because the main thing that's come out that he's done wrong is to go too far in criticising Flower in what should have been a private team meeting, of which details have now been at least taken to Flower and leaked further afield by the lips of it.
And
so I think to use the word trust against Peterson, I think trust is a weird word to use. I don't think you should necessarily trust all your teammates in all walks of life. You want your teammates to go out there and score runs for yourself.
Another weird word is ethics. And you haven't said it, and none of us
Sussex.
Have said it.
It's Sussex.
So De Bell pointed out in a really good piece that there's a slight problem with talking about ethics when you've got the batting coach who went on a rebel tour, captain a rebel tour, and when the head of the MCC been a rebel tour. And so if you want to drag that sort of stuff up, and now Flower's the opposite end of the scale. This is a guy who quite clearly is a man of enormous integrity, and he's allowed to express his opinion, and it's not a hypocrite for saying
all
as much.
Integrity. Yeah.
But does English cricket generally have to be a little bit careful? Because apparently some of the things that they're complaining about, you know, complaining that Cook is calling for a fitness session, a naughty boys fitness session before the fifth test when you're 4-0 down. Of course you don't want to have a fitness session. I mean, FYI, Cook, if that's what happened, you can't get fit in one session before a test match. That's madness.
But that's the way they do, maybe. And you know, it's been hinted at before. It's not just the headmaster. It's now the nicest kid in school who sticks up for everyone has finally turned against you. And at that point, do we have to go, if he is the great arbiter of character and professionalism, that's what we're putting in his hands, as Phil says. And he says, I'm sorry, mate, your last person who stuck your hand up for you is walking away.
But
and
if, that's
your
loss. The problem, sorry, Joe, go on.
If ethics is enough to get someone out of a side because they have poor ethics, do you start picking players
on
because
ethics,
they have good ethics?
Yeah, that's the point.
So it's their batting average, their suitability for those conditions, and
the ethics
they're a decent bloke. And that's just
also, if you look at business, because Strauss turns to business, so we're entitled to do so. It's well known that people recruit in their own image. This is why you have so many old white guys on boards all the time. So the England team are losing out on diversity if they start talking about a team person being a certain set of ethics, a certain set of behaviours, because it should be entirely to do with your skill and the way you play. Is it encouraging? I'm not talking about diversity in terms of race or anything like that, but is it encouraging of diversity generally to have this idea of an England player?
The diverse personality.
Well, the thing is, I absolutely agree with the principle. The problem with Kev is that if you go through the years, the different identities and incarnations of the England team have still not been able to fully integrate him into them. And so there's just this charge sheet of high-profile fallouts with all kinds of figures in English cricket, from Notts through to Hampshire, through to the early stages of England, obviously then through to Strauss and the Moores situation, and then now as well. And the team is everything, for sure. And I think, especially under Flower in particular, I think Flower was, personally, having interviewed him and followed him, because he's a fascinating man, I think he was a lot more flexible and progressive than maybe this kind of Sergeant Major image that had been, you know, pushed through by the end of it. I don't really think that was the truth of Flower. I think he was far too intelligent and sophisticated just to demand that everybody's one size fits all. I just don't really think he's like that. And he gave an interview to us a year and a half ago when he specifically laid out the importance of liberty and freedom of expression in the players. And he talks about the character and how you have to bring out individual characters because that makes a good and workable team. Flower, surely, you know, that's my understanding of Flower. I don't think it was a regimented approach, and I just think that Peterson, by the end of it, had burnt all his bridges.
And, you know, we talk about that one thing about skill. Would this have been far easier, a harder decision, if he had scored 200s in
it
that series
happened,
and
wouldn't
won a test?
He wouldn't have been dropped if he scored 200s.
Well, this is it. And you say Peterson has this charge sheet, but the Moores one is perhaps slightly different. But in almost every instance on that charge sheet is when things start to go wrong. And you could make a case to say that, well, then Peterson just becomes the natural scapegoat because he is this outsider. Always has been, even when things are going well. He's almost cultivated that himself. And it's natural because of everything else he has going on outside of cricket.
Well, let me say this. The one thing to say that I think hasn't been brought up, as far as I can see, is that they want this one big thing. We've all been talking about this one big thing. You know, it would be so much easier to understand if he had squared up to Cook in the members bar. How true that is, we don't know. If he had said something he really shouldn't have done in a team meeting. But isn't it perhaps the case that during Textgate, they were looking to manage KP through till the end of the Australia tour, to the back-to-back Ashes. And they had that target in mind all the way through.
Possibly,
yeah. And then knew that that would be the end of KP's career. Possibly. Just as DeBell said, you know, a lot of those pros at that time, Swan even, he mentioned Trott, he mentioned Anderson, who is sticking on, and he mentioned Peterson, were targeting that. And that probably wouldn't just be a player target, but also a management target in terms of after that, maybe it's time for a change. And maybe we've just reached that point.
I mean, that's a good point with the England management. Peterson very much had different idea. Might have had that idea initially, but over the last 6 months seemed to have changed because he'd said this 10,000 test runs mark.
Yeah.
He'd talked about playing one for another 2 years even. So perhaps there was this, I think, almost that they thought they'd agreed on something that actually they hadn't.
Yeah.
Peterson thought there was... I suppose a new era is a difficult one because no one thought we needed one until
2 months ago. Until very recently.
But just finally, from me anyway, on this thing, the question of morals and ethics is key to it, because once you hang this bloke out to dry publicly and essentially say he's too much trouble, he's not worth worrying about, then you need to win the argument. You need to win the moral argument by being candid and upfront and articulating the reasons why. And now, I know that there's a possibility, a distinct one, that they've been legally hamstrung, and you would know about this.
Oh, they are. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
I appreciate that. But in the eyes of the public, who are only seeing their favourite player no longer playing, it weakens their kind of claims to moral superiority when we don't have any kind of clarity as the public. And so I appreciate that it's complicated, but we need to, you know, people need to know, I think. They need to know why, fundamentally, the big man is no longer playing for their team. And they're public servants. I mean, that's the other thing, you know. It's a bit of a cliche, but he's a public servant, and the selectors are public servants.
Sunday's statement was extraordinary as well. I mean, just talk about throwing petrol on the fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're not able to say anything, and their hands are tied in that sense. To come out with that, just kind of leave us alone, we're all nice blokes, which was basically what the statement amounted to.
Very true.
It's just pathetic and only going to anger England fans. It's incredible. The amount of support Peterson's got is more than he's ever had in his England career, perhaps, bar over 2005.
Yeah. What's incredible, though, is I found Ed Smith said about that column, very well written, but he was talking about, does Sir Alex Ferguson ever have to justify his decisions when he got rid of Yap Stam, when he got rid of Roy Keane, when he decided it was time to get rid of David Beckham? Well, the difference there, it was quite apt, is that you know, Manchester United are not England. You know, they're not a team, you know, the whole country are pulling behind, who are public servants, you know. And also, the fact is that we trusted Ferguson because he had gained the respect of a large group of people, something that at the moment we don't perhaps have.
Well, this is part of the problem, that those who made the decision, we still don't know who the coach is. Paul Downing's been in the job 5 minutes. Alistair Cook's hanging on, well, not hanging on, but he's certainly not securing the job. And so, yeah, this huge decision has been made by a group of people that have yet to earn their stripes.
In all fairness to that group of people, there is a very rich and wonderful history of English cricket administrators getting things horribly wrong.
Well,
from D'Oliveira, before D'Oliveira, going all the way back, the Gubby Allens and Pelham Warners, and this posh establishment basically killing it for the common man.
But what's
and
really
it's feeding into that narrative.
Why we can't make a decision on this yet is it could be in this next cycle, in the next year or so, only then will we realise
England
and
find
out what we've done.
The first example is an interesting one as well, because when Beckham was told he was off, that wasn't just greeted with, well, Ferguson knows best. That was greeted, what are you doing? This is David Beckham.
Yeah.
But actually, 6 months on,
Man,
you have another title, and everyone forgets about it. And let's not kid ourselves, if England go on and beat India this summer, then the Peterson thing will quiet down a lot.
And just finally, sorry, and I'm going to say this now. When we did the interview with Peterson in September, there were a couple of things that he said that didn't make the final cut for various reasons. And the book was mentioned within 5 minutes of me sitting down with him, and he said it'll all come out in the book. And it was unprompted, and we were having a nice, gentle chat. And he said that straight away. And now that was the day that they left, literally the day they flew out to Australia. There were problems then, there were tensions simmering even then.
All right, we're going to take a small break. We're all going to catch our breath.
I'm
maybe have a
pre-order that book.
Yes, that's right. Doesn't even have a title yet.
October,
doesn't have a publisher.
October, is that right?
Fantastic.
Sketched in.
Okay, we'll have a quick Minders jingle and then we'll be back with some real cricket. Oh. Oh, I love the Blues. Don't you, Ross?
The Blues?
You know who's got the Blues at the moment? Steve Harmison's
yeah.
got the Blues.
Yeah, I heard him on the radio. He was very good the other day, I thought.
Oh, well, he's got a lovely diction.
Very knowledgeable. He's got that
of course,
soft
it's,
voice.
It is a regional accent, isn't it?
It is a regional accent.
But
Al,
a bit
yes.
like Hugh Edwards, the newsreader, it doesn't detract from the clarity of what he says.
No, which is amazing, really, isn't it?
It is, considering the fact that he's not from the home counties.
No, which is a shame.
So, Harmison, everybody's jumped on board. Flintoff, a surprise, surprise, had an opinion about this whole KP Flower thing. But my favourite is Harmison, who says that he also disapproves. Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, in context, announced that he'd actually applied to become the third selector. And that it had been, he'd been turned down for the job. He said, no problem with that. Mm-hmm. But what really got his goat is he got an automated reply from the ECB turning him down.
That's what 150 wickets gets you then.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's exactly what he said.
What he said?
Exactly.
Two men, one brain. Was just Downton in an office typing up in capitals, out of office reply, sorry, I'm not in.
I don't know. I would have absolutely loved Steve Harmison to be a selector because, I mean, why not? I thought about it. At first I thought, that's ridiculous. He can't be a selector. Then I thought...
Because he's so normal.
Fast bowler.
Yeah,
because that's what it is, isn't it?
Well,
I was wondering.
Them, yeah.
That's the prejudice, isn't it? It's because he's a bowler, so he's got no. It's got no brain.
Yeah,
Him, Hoggard.
It's terrible, isn't it?
Unlike Ashley Giles, spin bowler.
Yeah,
tweak it. Yeah, that's right.
Twink. Oh, variation
outside leg. That's right. He
not
can be
Stevie. He just runs up and throws it down.
Doesn't matter. You can have Embry involved in there.
Yeah,
you can
that's
have
true.
Giles. Any of this lot, but God forbid. God forbid you get Devon Malcolm in the selectors set up. You know what I mean? Norman Coward.
I had a chat with Dev on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, he's incandescent about KP.
Is he? Furious. Is he?
Yeah. He was spitting, he was.
The view from Devon Malcolm.
I would like to face him when he's angry about KP.
He's in the
way
as well, Dev.
Is he?
Bixworth, but somewhere in Northampton, he's still playing. He made 200s last year.
That's wonderful.
Very good.
Out of the All Out Crew Garden Party a couple of summers back, and was my he was each team had a celebrity. He was my celebrity in my team. We only got a score of 24. Dev, I think, hold out in the deep. So we put Dev on first up. We would just say, just blow him away. So we all stood up. We had three slips. It was a six aside as well. So we basically putting all our eggs in Devon's basket. So he came steaming in, probably delivered four wides, which in that cricket, because we had limited time, cost six runs each. So the game was over.
And then you just, in a microcosm, experienced what the England selectors experienced in the 90s.
We can't.
Which Devon is turning up.
Well, you had the high before the low. That's and there true. Was the
Well, the selectors don't want that kind of freewheeling pace man selecting the team, do they? Who is going to be there?
Before we get there, while we're just chatting about great England fast bowlers, I don't know, Norman Cowan's daughter went to my school.
Yeah.
And I was opening the bowling for my school. I was a statuesque 5'4" coming in. And I had a really horrible PE teacher. And he knew I loved cricket more than anything else in the world. And the fact that Norman Cowan was there on Parents' Day watching me bowl was just the best moment of my entire life. And I went up and spoke to him afterwards. And this bastard PE teacher walks past me now and goes, spoke to Norman Cowan earlier. Oh, yeah. Says you're a chucker.
Oh,
I'm still angry.
Furious with Cowans. You tweet us in.
I was a chucker, though.
Yeah.
I was. If you're 5'4", you've got no choice.
Enough of your reminiscences. Summers will never be the same. Thank you, Al. But let's get on to this. Who's going to be the new England coach, Joe Harmon?
Ashley Giles.
I think he is.
That was good.
I mean, I support the call, but
I see.
It has to, doesn't it have to be? If Giles has been privy to the let's get rid of Peterson conversations, doesn't it mean he has to be the coach?
Yeah.
Because if a new coach comes in and wants the job, wants to bring in Peterson, then is he told he's not allowed to because that decision's already been made? Unless, of course, that coach is Peter Moores, who probably wouldn't want Peterson in anyway.
There's the left field George De Bell theory, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's the only two, isn't it?
Peter Moores is the... They're going to select Ricky Clark of George De Bell's theories. It's not It's not going to be Peter Moores, is it?
Well, it's not just George De Bell's theories. There's quite a few
people
running.
Who else is in that little, little group?
That little... Who broke the... Where it was now.
It was something Paul Newman in the main.
Moores is, and we never know from the outside looking in, but regarded as the best coach, best hands-on coach in cricket, in English cricket. But we've had and Andy Flower had a team director who doesn't, it's not necessarily as hands-on, but runs the whole thing. And whether that's what Moores fits into is perhaps not quite the easy fit that Giles is perceived to be.
Can I ask you about somebody I don't know much about? Newell.
Mick Newell.
Yeah.
Do we know if he's applied for the job? We know has applied for the job? So Newell has.
Tom Moody.
Tom Moody.
Apparently has.
Yeah.
I would be behind that. See, big time.
Well, in our cult heroes top five of the pod blast, Moody's in the top five. The Bell's obviously in the top five.
Yes.
Every single week. All right, George.
he doesn't Moe listen.
Moe's in there.
Moe's in there.
Carbs as well.
Ben Stokes.
Moody's right in there.
Moody's right in there
because of you. But I was thinking about Moody the other day, and I thought I probably would have supported it were it not for the fact that everything he told you before Perth was wrong, wasn't it? On reflection. Everything. He thought England were going to come back in Perth. And signs were selecting Bresnan was a good idea.
Yeah.
And did he say anything that was correct?
He didn't say about Bresnan, actually, because he didn't really know who Bresnan was, which might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't say that. Yeah.
But he was positive about
England. Moody's great, though. Moody's a folk hero. And he knows English cricket as well. He knows English cricket very, very well.
You're Worcestershire bias, Ross.
Even though I'm not sure he knows the bat bounce rule, which I had a ding-dong with him on Twitter about.
Yeah, the famous ding-dong.
I want to say ding-dong. He didn't respond, but that was pretty one-sided.
Graham Hicken is batting coach.
Stuart Lampitt. And we'll have Phil Newport in the batting staff as well.
Nice done.
And Alan Gear Sherryar mixing the drinks. but I don't. Is there any truth behind this Gary Kirsten? Michael Vaughan keeps tight.
Is Kirsten stepped out? I mean, Kirsten's said no twice, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's getting
a bit fed up.
Kirsten would have been interesting in as much as he's. He's
terrible.
Kind of got great credentials, but you can't help feeling...
You're just remembering him bat, though, aren't you?
No, I'm not thinking him batting. I'm thinking of something very specific. It's the 2012 tour, South Africa came over. Firdaus Moonda, just every single article for Crick Info was like, I've been with the South African team and they all just love each other. They're having so much fun. And then Boucher got injured. Oh, they're all crying because Boucher's injured because they love each other so much. And Kirsten, like, he doesn't coach. He just sends them to a psychologist and then they do team bonding for a week.
Egg painting.
Thoroughly bored of them by the end of
it.
That's why I want to see it.
But yeah, you know, Gilo is almost certainly going to be given the gig, it looks like. And it's trying to find some good in this, because there's a kind of groundswell of indifference at best against him. And at worst, kind of, you know, antipathy towards the idea, because he's seen as this kind of yes man and very much part of the establishment, and after a thrashing, you want to shake things up. But the cult of the coach is very much the story of the last few years. And Flower, if there was a problem with Flower, or so the narrative goes, he'd become too dominant, domineering, if you like, or too all-powerful. And then if Giles comes in, then maybe it kind of will free Cook up to either sink or swim finally as a captain on his own terms.
Yeah.
And a coach with slightly less of an all-encompassing character, who will be intimidating to the young players and inhibiting to others and so on, as it apparently it went with Flower by the end. Maybe Giles's kind of more self-effacing kind of character might actually suit Cook. I'm trying to be positive about
it. The problem with Giles is he lost home and away ODI series against Australia.
Yeah, but you have to put that in context.
With a limited team. When he's had his best team, he got into a Champions Trophy
against
final.
A limited team.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but I some Aussies have been claiming it's their third 11.
I know, yeah.
It's like a hard tour to turn around, that one. I mean,
yeah.
And the Champions Trophy was a genuine... They should have won that tournament.
Yeah, and that's tournament. I mean, obviously, no one covered themselves in glory in Australia. It's like, you know, Kevin Peterson being the top scorer. But what I would say for Giles is that he does have that great record in the longer form of the game, and that's, in the main, the job he's going to be asked to do, and the one he hasn't had a chance to do as yet. And I think his credentials, it's mixed. He hasn't had it all his own way in the ODI setup, but he has had his victories, and they haven't been that recent, but the Champions Trophy laid down quite a good marker.
I want Giles to be England coach purely because he used to play for Ripley, just outside Guildford, and so did I. And it's a local ledge. Very fond memories of actually Giles around there.
If we take out, though, the ugly scenes of the last few months, and if we take out the defeat in the ODIs just gone, then Giles, you know, he's won a championship. He's played championship with Warwickshire. He's played international cricket regularly. He knows the setup. He has a decent relationship with a number of the players who are already there. And he's been a selector for a couple of years and is very much in tune with county cricket and so on, and respects county cricket as well. So the credentials there are pretty solid and persuasive. And so I don't think that this is necessarily just this big surrender, this kind of, you know, kind of whitewash, you know, we're just going to give it to our boy, you know, as a continuity appointment. I don't necessarily
what appointment?
See it as that.
What happens if England have an absolute howler at the World 2020? Should that impact upon his credentials for the Test job? Because now that is all one thing. That was made the one thing that has been made clear by the ECB is that it's one person does all three jobs.
Yeah.
So Giles could actually almost lose the Test role without having had a chance to have a go based on a World 2020, which is a slightly bizarre scenario.
I think that's a really interesting point, but I do think that we're being set up to have a howler in the T20, so much so that anything, you know, winning any game, beating the qualifier would seem to be better than expectations, given the recent departure of our best T20 player.
It's not even that. I don't understand how we've sunk so low in T20 so suddenly. We looked pretty good about a year ago. It's going to be really, really difficult.
I think Jade
Durbag,
you could chart that with Jade Durbag's emergence.
It's difficult to know where they're going to take wickets. That's the real thing I took away from watching the ODI, both 50 and T20. I was watching it going, you really need a fully fit Finn, probably, definitely for ODI. And I don't know whether he used to do T20, but I don't know where they're going to take their wickets.
Well, they don't really have a frontline spinner there as well. When you're picking Parry, who in fairness, I have to know a little about because I'm playing your first class cricket. It's pretty desperate though. I mean, it kind of smacked of when they picked Chris Schofield for the first one of these, when they didn't really know how the format worked or who to pick. It doesn't say a lot for the kind of England spin kind of recruit, like the possibilities they can go to.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting one. And the fact that we haven't got a spinner, Treadwell's coming back, who we previously said can't really play T20, who's got hit all over the place in T20, having done well in the other formats. The one good thing is that Parry does have the only person in cricket seems to have a fairly comparable economy to Graham Swann.
Blimey.
New Zealand. Joe.
What a lead-in.
What a great victory.
Yeah, I support New Zealand now. It's great. I've always obviously had divided loyalties, but in the current context of world cricket, I'm falling firmly on the side of New Zealand. And it's a really exciting time for New Zealand. They've got lots of exciting cricketers. They're doing well in all three formats.
Well, they've got some very exciting cricketers. I don't think we can avoid saying Jesse Ryder.
Well, no.
Do we start with him? Is that unfair?
No. Let's talk about him. Because New Zealand had to deal with this. They've beaten India in a test match. They have a press conference after the game and they're asked questions about a bloke who wasn't even in the side because he was out getting pissed the night before the game. It's really unfortunate. I spoke to Jesse Ryder about a week ago. Must have been just after one of his piss-ups now I think about it.
What was the mood of the man, Joe?
Well, he didn't sound pissed. He wasn't particularly talkative. I've had more fluent interviews, it has to be said. And we could put that down to perhaps a time delay, him obviously being in New Zealand. But he was certainly he was reluctant. Perhaps he's wary of the press again. Not surprising given what he's gone through. But I was a bit disappointed. I hadn't spoken to him before, and he's one of my favourite cricketers. Really,
he is. He's one of my favourite cricketers. No sooner does he get up, he disappoints us all again.
And this is it. The few lines that I did get from him were all about I want this more than ever, having gone through what he's gone through, and some of that was not his fault. That should be made clear as well.
Absolutely.
So I wrote up this piece, which I finished 3 days ago, saying that fresh start for Jesse Ryder and how new beginnings, new man. And then he went into that, and we're still waiting to see if he'll actually be in the World 2020 squad. So
recap for me: Doug Bracewell, Jesse Ryder in a pub the night before a game.
Bracewell and Ryder are in trouble all the time together. They're heavy drinkers, aren't they? And they're both quite large. And I just think they're 70s cops. That's what they really are, aren't they? They're 70s New York cops, Bracewell and Ryder.
No good cop.
No good
bad
cop.
Cops.
That's right. Yeah. They need to be separated. To use the language of
his foot in twice now on the back of a piss up, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the way reference to New Zealand articles.
Very good.
Jake Neeson was apparently Ryder's minder on one of the previous nights. So they do give him a minder, allegedly. And if they've given him Doug Bracewell, I don't know. It seems a poor effort.
That's
but anyway, Doug Bracewell, very unfortunately, was trying to get into a cab, slipped on the curb and broke a bone in his foot. Which is astonishing. I don't know how high this taxi was.
What does he do with his feet, Doug Bracewell? Is when he just flings them around all over the place. Doug, keep yourself under control.
Very rudely, for about the last 3 minutes during the course of this conversation, I've had one eye on my Twitter feed because there was a fantastic stat I got the other day about New Zealand cricket that isn't loading at the moment, which is
I've got it, don't worry. This is from... you're talking about Michael Wagoner.
That's correct.
Michael Wagoner says... he kept giving you stats, you kept saying, but what does it mean? That's what you kept saying, wasn't it, Al? And it means that New Zealand have had a 200 or more first innings lead quite often in the last 2 years. How often, Al?
They've declined to enforce the follow-on now. They've declined to enforce the follow-on, what is it, 4 times in the last 2 years. So New Zealand batting... is really strong. I know their openers are going through a real trough, but I mean, Brendan McCullum and Kane Williamson at the moment are just on fire.
Well, McCullum had had a tough run. McCullum had a tough run in tests up until that century. Yeah. We should also say, so they won a test match.
They did, they won the test match. Well done.
That's the main point.
And thank God they did as well, because 300 lead on first innings, and then he doesn't enforce the follow on, and then Jesse's story breaks, and then they were bowled out for 100. And then at one point, I was watching it on the Saturday night. At one point, India were favourites to win that game. They won 2 down, less than 200 needed. And
there you go, finally. Finally. Listeners, you've been asking now via tweet and email, what does Phil do on a Saturday night? The answer, New Zealand cricket.
Absolutely.
East London poets till midnight.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, by the way.
Yeah.
Unbelievable slur.
Misrepresentation. What about this Corey Anderson? Have we mentioned him on the show before?
He's a unit. We have mentioned him before because he's so very, very big. But they slotted him neatly into the test side and he scored 77.
Well, so I spoke to McCullum a little while back about the state of New Zealand cricket, about what they need to do as a side. And he said we need 6 proper batsmen, and one of those 6 is Anderson. He sees him as a batsman who bowls a bit rather than a genuine all-rounder. But McCullum had some really interesting things to say about New Zealand cricket as a whole and the way they should play as a New Zealand team. He said one of the things they've got going for them is the fact that they are a small, dynamic nation that can adapt, can change tactics quickly, and that they can take advantage of sides who have more to lose. So sides who might perhaps, like England, who might be fearful of losing, so therefore go for a draw. McCullum wants this New Zealand side to take advantage of that and force wins in situations that they might.
It's going to be exciting.
So he said, like Shane Warne was banging on about last summer, they've got to be prepared to lose some matches in order to win some, and they've got a side. That can do that now. They've got enough dynamic batsmen, and McCullum was at pains to make this point. The batsmen are in great form, but this side he's building is built around Trent Bolt and Southee. He says that they can take 20 wickets. The onus is on the batsmen to get them in a situation where they can win tests, which is what they've done.
And England's ability to actually not lose that series against New Zealand last winter now in context starts to look a little bit better when you see India go down there and lose.
One of the great rear guards you've ever seen.
Yeah. All right, well, New Zealand... Dark horses, aren't they?
Dark horses. That's what I said before.
They're greater than the sum of their parts.
Well, let's go on to another man that's been in the news, Sangakkara. Scored a fantastic 300. Hour. What did you make of it?
I thought that it was a lot of runs to score.
Oh, was
for one man.
Test match, wasn't
it was. Yeah.
Yes. Well, what do we think about Bangladesh at the moment? And in particular, I'm interested in your thoughts on Ashraful, because. To my mind, this is a guy who I see him play and I think he's completely innocuous. His test record is fantastic. I looked it up the other day, he's got a bowling average of about sort of 33 or something.
But he's a batsman, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
But his batting record's not very good.
Am I thinking of Shakib Al Hassan?
Is
Ashraful the one that's in the corruption thing?
He scored a century against Australia when he was about 17.
Oh, yeah.
He was against Australia, but he was the youngest ever.
I mentioned the corrupt guy, didn't I?
Al Hassan is someone mentioned him in the All Out Cricket rundown as the perhaps the best player in the world.
Okay, that's the Bangladeshi correspondent.
It was indeed, but he is a terrific player. He does well in the IPL every year, bats and balls.
Well, Sangakkara scored a lot of runs, then Bangladesh scored a lot of runs, and then it was a draw.
And that's the end of that one. We move on and play another game.
3,500 he's got, Alex. 3,500s, Kumar Sangakkara. Over 11,000 runs in Test cricket. Oh, what could have been, KP?
For some reason, So Solid Crew came to my mind when you said that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've got 21 seconds to go.
Okay.
But it didn't really apply.
Doesn't apply, huh? Put that out of your mind. Well, listeners, we're coming to the end of another fantastic show. How's it been for you, Joe?
It's been fantastic.
It's been long, hasn't it?
It's been a longer one. It's been a bumper show.
It's been 40 minutes.
There's a lot of news to cover.
There's a lot to cover.
For the off-season.
And we leave no stone unturned.
Let it never be said. Aren't they?
They are. The cricket season approaches. How's the fixture list coming along for the teams you play? You're setting it up now? New year?
There's actually been a bit of an issue with that today, but I don't
want to
go into it.
No, you can't go into it.
Fixtures.
I've just completed planning the tour to Belgium, that great cricketing nation. Yeah, a couple of days in Brussels.
Really?
This has been very middle class.
Late August.
It's been like the...
This has been the most
I feel very comfortable.
It's like that posh coverage of the Winter Olympics, where they
all
pretend to be rude boys.
All of are going to be from Guildford.
Aren't they? Go on, they're probably all watching the Winter Olympics and shouting, "Get down with it, bad boy!" And other stuff like that.
See you next week.
Tweet us.